The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
You want to know everything that's wrong with politics and with Democrat control in our state? I got it for you in just a moment here. We're coming to you from Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you're with us. It's a very busy afternoon, as usual, as we will do up until Tuesday. We're keeping an eye on some new polling coming in today on Tiffany Smiley, Patty Murray, and the United States control of the Senate and the House. We'll keep you posted on all of the breaking news that comes into us this afternoon. But a lot of these crucial races are coming down to the wire. I'm going to talk at 12:30 this afternoon with a Republican who's running for state house. He's the incumbent. His name is Greg Gilday. The Democrats had a dream. They thought that this was a seat they could flip from Republican to Democrat in Olympia. And I don't cover a lot of legislative or Senate races in Olympia because each district is so small that it really represents only a tiny portion of our radio audience. And so we talk much more about the statewide or countywide. Everything in Seattle has coattails that affects everyone. But there's one race we have to talk about. It's the 10th Legislative District. So Greg Gilday is a Republican. He wants to be reelected to the House. The Democrats put a guy up against him named Clyde Shavers. Clyde Shavers seems to have a decent resume. He went to Yale. He went to law school. He good-looking guy. But there's a pretty big problem with Clyde Shavers. He completely exaggerated his resume. And the way we know this is his dad, his father, Brett Shavers, sent a letter out to the media to explain what his son had done. You see, Clyde Shavers, he claimed to be a United States Navy submarine officer. That is not true. He claimed that his mother came to this part of the world because she was fleeing her homeland. That is not true. He greatly exaggerated his mother's immigration status. He said that Clyde Shavers said that he had been homeless. His dad said he's never been homeless. He said he grew up in a farming family. His dad says we were never a farming family. And he also said he lives in the 10th Legislative District. And it looks like that is not true as well. So Clyde Shavers' father, Brett, is a solid man. He was a Marine. He was a cop. And he said that he just couldn't stand by and watch his son tell all of these lies about himself. So the father wrote this letter. I want to give credit, first of all, to Linwood Times, which is where I saw this story broken. But what the dad wrote is, I am Clyde Shavers' father. I speak for both me and my wife regarding our son's political campaign. In watching the past weeks of our son's campaign, I see it's led to accusations of untruthfulness and conduct that I wished to never have seen or been drawn in the middle of. And the dad says that as a matter of integrity, he has to set the record straight. Clyde was never a submarine officer, not even for a day. Clyde has disdain for the military. Well, Clyde can't say that because his district includes Whidbey Island, where we have a U.S. Naval Air Station and a lot of wonderful military people. But according to his dad, Clyde only has disdain for the military. He says that Clyde has no ties to Whidbey Island or the legislative district in which he's running. The dad says that his wife, Clyde's mom, did not flee to the United States for a better life, she sought refuge here. She was a foreign exchange student from Japan, and she met the dad, Brett Shavers, and they fell in love and they got married. She was not fleeing for a better life. And on it goes. Okay, now here's and what's unbelievable about this story. This is a race that there's been nearly $1 million spent for a state house seat. That is an incredible amount of money. But it's because the Democrats have poured money into Clyde Shaver's campaign because they want to flip that seat from Republican to Democrat. Now, here's the thing. Clyde Shaver's, even though his dad has exposed him as a serial liar, Clyde Shaver's is not withdrawing from the race. And in fact, the Democrats have said that they are going to stand by Clyde Shaver's. I mean, that is how despicable the Democrat Party has gotten in this state, that they would rather have a proven liar in Olympia representing them than somebody who's done a good job as a state rep on the other side. I'm going to talk to his opponent, Greg Gilday, coming up right after 12:30 this afternoon. But look, the reason the Democrats are standing by him, I believe, is because then they'll say, hey, you have no integrity, we're kicking you out, and then they can appoint a Democrat replacement. But it's stealing an election. 30% of the ballots in that district have already been cast. And those 30%, they didn't know anything about what a serial liar Clyde Shaver's dad says that Clyde Shaver's is. So if you haven't cast a vote yet, you better not vote for this Clyde Shaver's guy, according to his dad, because he's a pathological liar. And as I said, he went to Yale. I mean, he's got a solid resume without the lies. But that's the kind of integrity that the Democrat Party is standing by here in Washington State right now. It's amazing. Okay, I'll talk to his opponent for that seat coming up right after the news at the bottom of the hour here at 12:30. All right, with that as mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
The news in this region that has emerged just in the last 24, 48 hours illustrates just how horrible things have gotten with crime in our region. Now, this first story happened a couple of weeks ago, but we have some new information on it. There's a man named Che Un. There's an Asian couple that lives here locally near Lacey. 53-year-old Che Un allegedly attacked his estranged wife, Young Un, who's 42 years old. They're getting divorced. There's contested money issues. And so Che Un reportedly, according to documents, he kidnapped his wife. He tied her up with duct tape. He stabbed her. And then he drove 7 miles to bury her alive in a 19-inch deep hole in the woods. This is all according to Lacey police. He left her there to die. But what he didn't count on is his wife was wearing an Apple Watch. And as she was buried alive in this 19-inch hole, she was able to call 911. We're not going to play a lot of this, but I just want to illustrate how this woman fought for her life.
911, what are you reporting? Hello? Hello?
She'd been hogtied and gagged. And when she made this 911 call, the police were responding to the house where she was at the time. And then the husband threw her in the trunk of a car, and as police were arriving, he went speeding off. And maybe the cops otherwise could have chased him down when they saw a car speeding away from a house where there had just been a 911 call. But you're not allowed to do a car pursuit. And they did not at that time know that the wife was bound and gagged in the trunk of the car that had just sped away from them. And a little later in this 911 tape, before he buried her alive.
What's going on there?
Okay, 911 dispatcher does an awesome job.
I'm going to get help started to you.
Okay, because she couldn't understand a word she was saying because, again, the woman was bound and gagged. But she did dispatch help right away, even though she had no idea the gravity of what was happening. And then the husband started smashing the Apple Watch on her wrist, threw her in the trunk, sped away as cops were arriving at the address. Now, ordinary course of action, you're arriving at a 911 call with multiple respondents, police. You see a car speed away, you chase it down and wonder what's going on. Can't do that in Washington anymore. Not allowed to. Unless the cops actually witness a crime or have proof. If they knew the woman was in the trunk, they could have followed and chased the car. But at that point, they didn't know. It was just a car speeding away. And the Democrats in Olympia have said you can't chase that car. So this woman ends up tossed in a 19-inch deep hole in the woods. But thankfully, the police, after showing up at the 911 call house, they were able to track down where she was, and they were able to rescue her from being buried alive. It's just, and according to prosecutors, at one point he stabbed her in the breast, he covered her with dirt and fallen branches, and then the woman was able to crawl out of the hole. This is how she fought for her life. She crawled out of the hole hours later after having been buried alive. She ran through the woods for a half hour and then finally found a good Samaritan who called 911, and they were able to piece all of these things together. But good call, Democrats. Don't allow cops to chase a car that speeds away from a 911 call address. Because maybe they would have discovered the woman in the trunk. Maybe they could have saved her before hours of being buried alive in the hell she was living. But we have such messed up policing. Oh, but that's just the start of all the messed up policing that we have to tell you about in Des Moines, where there was a violent armed carjacking, four suspects, one barely an adult, and three of them juveniles. But they put a gun to one guy's head. They were violent. And you can't have people with guns running around. That's what Democrats tell us all the time. But the police did catch these carjackers. They went before two judges, one for the 18-year-old, three for the juveniles. And within 72 hours, all four armed carjackers were out of jail and back on the streets. The Des Moines police chief is Ken Thomas, and he could not believe that these guys were released.
I consider these suspects to be dangerous to our community.
But this is what I've been telling you about for years now, that our judges are a huge part of the crime problem with this revolving door, even for people who commit felonies with guns.
That these suspects are out on the street. I think they should be in jail.
And it is the judge's responsibility.
And releasing these suspects before the prosecutor's office even had all of the documentation from our detectives. They didn't have all of the information, and they still chose it was not a big enough deal to hold them into custody.
The prosecutors tried to keep him in jail. They asked for a $100,000 bond for the 18-year-old. Now, the juveniles, the two 17-year-olds and a 16-year-old, that's tougher because Dow Constantine has tried to make this a no-youth jail community. Because they're just children. In the minds of the sick people who run this county, like Dow Constantine, like the judges who sit on the bench. And so we've got very dangerous kids who have access to guns back out on the street.
What I'm saying is we have a broken system in King County that is failing our community.
And one of the victims who had a gun put to his head talk to Cairo 7 News.
I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I'm disappointed.
Four armed carjackers back out on the streets within 72 hours because Dow Constantine believes in no youth jail. Shouldn't even be any punishment for armed carjackings if you're 17 or 16 years old because you're just children. But they're emboldened because when you can steal a car, the cops can't chase it. And then you have these sick judges who are just kicking people loose when they're among the most violent. And then one more that I'm going to go more in depth into a little bit later. But I told you yesterday about the suspect who murdered two people in Seattle's Georgetown neighborhood. A 53-year-old man and a 55-year-old woman were stabbed to death. And the suspect in this case, John Williams, has a criminal history like you could not believe. He'd been arrested 65 times in California. He was a suspect in a rape in California. Then he comes up here and commits many crimes. How is he out on the street with 65 prior arrests? Well, the shadowy Northwest Bail Fund operation, a group that does bail some of the most violent human beings on planet Earth out of jail so that they can wreak more havoc. This is a group that has Marxist ideologies, but they never talk to the media. But they're part of this growing operation with politicians and groups like them that want to unleash as much crime in the region as possible. So they make sure that this guy gets bailed out of jail, even though he has 65 prior arrests. And then 2 days after he got out of jail, he goes to Seattle's Georgetown neighborhood and stabs two people to death. The woman was stabbed as many as 100 times, according to court documents. All of this is because of Democrat policies. They couldn't chase the guy because they didn't know he had a woman in his trunk before he buried her alive. Four armed carjackers are free today because of Democrat policies. And then this latest story, a guy with 65 arrests, bailed out by leftist organizations so that they can go and murder people in the Georgetown neighborhood. Yeah, the Democrats are doing a great job running our region. There better be some change when the Tuesday vote comes in. Okay, that is your big lead this hour. Quick timeout, and then I will talk with the opponent of the pathological liar who the Democrats are supporting for the state House seat. It's an unbelievable story. But we got lots of stories for you today that are going to be hard to believe, but they're all rock solid true. As we get rolling here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as we told you yesterday, something bizarre has happened at a state race level. We haven't been covering the individual state representative and Senate races because they all affect such a tiny portion of my audience. But this one kind of transcends that. There is a guy running as a Democrat in the 10th Legislative District. His name is Clyde Shavers, and he made all kinds of claims about being a U.S. submarine officer for the Navy, that his mother just had to escape to America. That was her immigration status, that he'd been homeless, that he grew up in a farming family, and that he lives in the 10th Legislative District. His father, Clyde Shavers' father, sent out a letter saying none of that stuff is true. So we have reached out to Clyde Shavers. The guy who's running against him is Greg Gilday, who joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, Greg, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Dory. Glad to be here.
It took something like this to elevate a state race to my show, but this is pretty bizarre stuff. So as I understand it, Greg, Clyde Shavers' father wrote a 3-page letter refuting all of his son's claims, but he sent that letter to you and your campaign?
Yeah, that's right. So last week, Clyde wrote a rather rude and dishonest Facebook post against me, and before I could even get a response up to that, his dad contacted me and said, "This has got to stop. I can't hold my tongue anymore." And so he did provide the letter to us this last weekend, and we disseminated it to the press because we think that this is a really big deal. Honesty and integrity, we should expect that from our state representatives.
Well, it is a big deal, and you know, I've been very honest. I think we need to flip at least one chamber in Olympia from Democrat to Republican. So I'm all for this Democrat, Clyde Shavers, not winning. But I want to make sure I understand this. So you did not initiate this with his father. He reached out to you unsolicited.
Absolutely. After that Facebook post was posted by Clyde, his dad found my office number and called me at my office a number of times, and then sent my campaign an email saying, this is who I am, this is how you can verify who I am, and I want to correct the record because this is dishonorable.
Okay, and so what did the father tell you? Because he makes clear in the letter that he loves his son, that he it doesn't sound like they're particularly estranged, although they may be after this. But what did he say to you when he first started running all this stuff down?
Well, basically what I mean, and I didn't talk to him directly. My campaign consultant was the one who talked with him directly. But basically what he told the campaign was that, you know, because he is a former Marine, he is a former police officer, and honor and integrity are very important to him. And so he has been apparently counseling his son from the beginning of the campaign until now that, look, you need to come clean. You need to be honest. You need to have integrity. And when Clyde just failed to do that and continued to lie, he didn't think he had any other option but to contact us in order to get the truth out there.
Okay, and is this considered a swing district, your 10th legislative district?
Very, very much a swing district. We're one of four split districts. So I have one of the seats currently. My seatmate is a Democrat. And in 2020, I won my seat by under 900 votes, and my seatmate won by fewer votes than I did. So it is definitely a swing. The left's been pouring a bunch of money into this race, both for Clyde and against me. So yes, it's definitely a swing district.
Well, how much has been spent? I've heard that in total between your campaign and Clyde Shavers, the $2 million has been spent on this race. Is that right?
I don't know if it's quite that much. I know the last time I checked, Clyde's had from the left's attack pack, they've spent about $300,000 supporting him and about $150,000 in opposition to me. That doesn't count all the money that the Democrat Party has put into Clyde's campaign directly. I think that amounts to about $250,000.
What's been your campaign budget?
My campaign budget, I have about $350,000 that I've raised, and Clyde is up about $480,000.
Okay, so this is still a lot of money for a state legislative race. So that would
it's an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, I mean it's incredible. Okay, I want to move on to your positions in just a moment here, but what makes this very weird to me, Greg, is that Clyde Shavers seems like without the lies, he'd be a fairly reputable person to run for state office. He went to Yale University. He did take some submarine training. He did study to be a lawyer, although he's not past the bar, as he claimed. But, I mean, he seems like somebody who has decent credentials without all of these wild exaggerations.
Absolutely. I mean, he has J.T. Wilcox pointed this out on Facebook, that he has a wonderful resume. But for whatever reason, he couldn't help but embellish and lie about just about every aspect of it.
It's very weird. Okay, so let me get to you for a second here, since I said I don't cover many state races. So what do you think are the most important issues that are going to be facing whoever wins your race in the state legislature?
Yeah, absolutely. So been knocking on a lot of doors, and three issues come up most often. And the first is public safety. You know, it's about, I would say, probably 75-80% of the doors that I hit on either have a Ring doorbell, a security camera, or something of the like. People aren't even feeling safe at home, and we need to address some of the public safety issues that have been going on, including police pursuit, including making drugs illegal again, including allowing the law enforcement to do the job that they were actually hired to do. So that's number one. Number two, it's the economy and inflation. And, you know, while Olympia is not going to solve the inflation problem for the country, it's bigger than just us, we can stop piling on. We had a $15 billion budget surplus this last session, and the other side managed to spend it all and have to raise taxes and fees in the process. Yeah. And so we need to get our spending under control down there. And then the third thing is housing. We are in a housing crisis in this state. And we need to get creative on how we can get more houses built out there, because the only way we're going to dig ourselves out of this is to increase the supply of housing.
So you're a higher density person?
Higher density is one of the things that we need to look at. Absolutely. And so but it's one of those things that there are a lot of decisions over the past number of years that have got us to where we are now. I mean, latest studies show, I think we're about 250,000 housing units short in this state. And a lot of things got us to this point, and we're going to need to do a lot of different things in order to get us out. And the thing is, we need to get away from the one size fits all approach, because what works down in Seattle isn't going to work up here on Whidbey Island or in Stanwood or in Skagit
right.
County.
Yeah,
and
I'm with you on the crime issue. I'm with you on the budget and spending issue. I'm not crazy about some of the higher density mandates that have come from government to individual cities where people like their way of life and don't want a bunch of things packed in. But I'm not going to agree with everybody about everything. I know that.
No, and that's just fine. And I'd rather have the carrots instead of the stick. Last session we had a bill, 1157, that would have given cities the incentive to increase density and would have given them a portion of the state's real estate excise tax in exchange for that, so they could help pay for some of the mitigating effects.
Okay.
But I would rather incentivize cities to increase density in a way that makes sense for that individual locality.
Let's bring this full circle. Do you have any idea, before Clyde Shaver's father said that he is greatly exaggerating his resume, do you have any idea how many ballots in your district have already been submitted?
You know, so in Island County, which is the majority of my district, I think about 30,000 or 30% of the ballots had been already submitted before this story started breaking wide open. But it's, you know, how I'm looking at it is better late than never. And this is such a swing district. We're really fighting over the middle 1,000 or 2,000 people. And I think that there are enough swing voters and enough voters that haven't yet turned in their ballot that this is going to definitely affect the race. And I think that we can count on a win here.
Well, I hope that everybody in your district understands, no matter how partisan they are, no matter how Democrat party they are, I hope they understand that it's still reasonable for us as voters to demand integrity and honesty. And I know that that's been eroded so much that a lot of people have just lowered their expectations. But if a guy wildly exaggerates his background the way your opponent, Clyde Shavers, has, I hope even Democrats would recognize that we don't need that in Olympia. We don't need somebody who has that kind of, or lack of integrity, sitting in the state legislature.
Well, I would hope so. And a lot of the voters that I'm talking to, you know, we have NAS Whidbey up here on Whidbey, and we have a lot of veterans, a lot of active duty servicemen and women, and they are all seeing how this is a travesty. But then again, you have the head of the House Democratic Campaign Committee, who, you know, was quoted as saying he hopes Clyde's still successful. You've got one of the Island County commissioners coming out saying, I still stand behind Clyde. And so, I mean, you still have some of these Democratic politicians. I haven't heard from my seatmate yet whether or not he still stands behind Clyde, but I would hope to hear from him before the election happens.
Well, it's just crazy. Well, yeah, now you make a great point that with Naval Air Station Whidbey, somebody who exaggerates their Navy record claiming to be a submarine officer when they never were, I would hope that would be a strong factor in what they decide.
Yep.
All right, well, you've got one of the races that I'm going to know to watch carefully on Tuesday night now, Greg.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Appreciate you talking with me. Greg Gilday, he is the guy who did not exaggerate his background and his resume, but I think that this is an absolute disqualifier for his opponent, Clyde Shavers, and it's his dad who called out his own son on this. So what does that tell you? I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. You can text me at 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. We have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. I have said for at least a year and a half that what we did to our children during COVID will be seen as one of the great moral crimes of our lifetime. I mean, there's so many things that are happening to kids that are moral crimes. We've got doctors and pharmaceutical companies physically mutilating children. That is a moral crime. I'm going to have more on that tomorrow, by the way. Some shocking new information about that. But also just keeping kids out of school and the amount of mental illness that happened, the lack of education that the kids obtained. And now we're starting to see the effects of it. Some of these, a lot of these kids are going to be impacted for the rest of their life, professionally and financially. Because, according to the New York Times, not exactly a right-wing rag, according to the New York Times, kids who graduated high school or had a year or two of high school during COVID are now doing dismally poor in college. At least the ones who got accepted are doing horribly. There were a lot who couldn't even get accepted into college. But this new report from the New York Times says that many of these students have fallen so badly behind in college that many are not even going to make the cut. Now, you know what that means? Because a college diploma, a four-year degree, on average, and I'm not promoting you got to get a four-year degree because I think trades are wonderful. And some of the best people that I know are blue-collar tradesmen who can make a lot of money as a plumber and an electrician and all of that. So I don't think college is a necessity. But on average, those with a four-year college degree over the course of their lifetime make hundreds of thousands of dollars more. I think the estimate is over $1 million more in the course of a lifetime than somebody who does not have a college degree. So according to this New York Times report and study, students whose last 2 years of high school were marred by school lockdowns and online learning are falling desperately behind in college. The class of 22, they were sophomores when the pandemic began, so they basically missed two full years of high school. They cannot keep up with freshman college courses now. And showing a dismal decline in fourth and eighth grade test scores nationally. I told you about that a few days ago. It's reaching a crisis point. Enrollment in undergrad programs and colleges has fallen 4.2% because a lot of kids just know. One out of 20 kids knows that they could have made college if they hadn't lost 2 years of education in our public schools. But now they think they can't cut it, so they're not even trying. And what we're seeing, the kids who do get in aren't able to pass basic freshman courses. So the projection is that a lot of those kids are going to drop out of college. So decisions made by people like Jay Inslee, who kept our schools closed longer than almost any state in the nation, is going to financially impact hundreds of thousands of lives. A moral crime it was, that's for sure. Okay, quick time out. Check the news. Get you the latest polling results. That insane Joe Biden speech last night, all part of the Best 15 next.